and welcome to Minute 20 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and once again, Tom is still, hopefully he will be out and be able to join us again on Monday. But joining me to finish off the week today is Todd Liebenow of the Forgotten Filmcast. Welcome back, Todd.
Absolutely.
All right, I've been having a lot of fun this week. Hopefully you have too. Hopefully all of our listeners also have been enjoying it.
That's important. Yeah, hopefully.
All right, so episode 20 starts off with Hilt still screaming, "Don't shoot," and talking back to Von Luger. This is one of the most classic scenes of the movie. Obviously, this is starts off, and we all know why. You know, everyone who knows that Tarantino is a fan of The Great Escape can know that from the tag end of this minute, beginning of next week's minute, because he copied it second by second, or shot by shot, in his movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where he replaces Steve McQueen with Leonardo DiCaprio, which I still think that McQueen does a better job of that.
You think?
as much as I like DiCaprio, but, you know.
Well, I mean, this is one of those scenes that is one where you just go, McQueen's so cool. You know, I mean, you know, it's kind of cliche, he's cool. But, you know, you watch the scene and you go, man, Steve McQueen is cool. You
know? Well, that's why we said that he's the cooler king. He's here.
Yes.
That's how he got the role. It might have even been McQueen's idea to call him the cooler king, because he's cooler than all the other kings. He's cooler than the Tunnel Kings. He's cooler than...
He's cooler than the Plow King and the Sausage King, all those guys, yeah.
That's right. Basically, we continue with the scene from yesterday's minute, where you have McQueen, who was about to get shot, whether it was by a sharpshooter who knows that he was planning on missing or someone who just is a really poor shot and missed. So he runs into the middle of the compound. Don't shoot, don't shoot. While he's doing that, you see a lot of prisoners, you know, run over. You have one of the German guards. Actually, it's not Frick. I'm trying to remember which guard it is, who jumps over the wire. And then you just have all the extras dawdling around watching. Some people hanging out of windows.
Every extra that was on the set that day is there, lined up, and watching what is going on here. They all wanted to make sure they were going to be on screen with Steve McQueen that day.
Correct. No question about that. And what is that the German says to him? What does he say, Todd?
What's the German say? Oh, well, are you talking about just basically, why did you go over the wire? Which they all say like 20 times. It's like every German has to come in and say, why did you go over the wire? It says the question over and over again. It's like, you want him to say, you know, the more times you ask me, doesn't make it any different. You know, I mean, I guess I'm kind of speaking wrong, but I'm getting way ahead of ourselves.
Right. No, he goes, did you cross the wire? Is it what wire? What wire?
Well, the great thing about this scene. Yeah, what wire?
And he's looking down. He's in the middle of the area, and he's just looking down. He goes, there's no wire on the floor, on the ground here.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, one of the things I love about this whole scene is that McQueen, it's like, he's acting like a six-year-old through half of it, you know, because, you know, what wire? That's something like a kid would say. Or, you know, why did you go over the wire? Well, my baseball. I mean, how am I supposed to get my baseball? It's my baseball. I mean, this is the type of things that you know, five-year-olds say, you know, where they go down like they're playing baseball or something. They start talking about, I don't know, like that house down at the end of the block or something. And, you know, oh, you know,
it's an haunted house.
There's an old guy that lives in that house. It's a haunted house, and he kills and eats kids, you know, and stuff like that. When they go over his fence, and they go, no, that, you know.
But my baseball, I had to go get it.
Right, exactly. So, you know, they dare the kid to throw his baseball over, something like that. You know, I mean, it's kind of that line of thinking going on here, but it's great.
Yeah, I mean, McQueen has a lot of lines in this movie where he just acts, like you said, as a kid. I mean, it's meant to be taken in a humorous way, and it is, but it sort of lessens his character by the way that he does it. But I mean, on the one hand, it lessens his character, but it creates his character.
It does.
For those of us who've seen this movie so many times, I couldn't expect him to respond in any other way.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're right on both fronts. You know, if you say it lessens because it makes you initially think like, oh, this guy's, you know, kind of an idiot or whatever. But then at the same time, he's just trying to mess with them. You know, he knows what he's doing here. He's just toying with them. So it just kind of ups that cool for him. But, you know, I get why, you know, he's so concerned with the baseball. I mean, of course, the baseball plays a role throughout the film, you know, but I mean, baseball is a valuable thing. I mean, you know, I mean, I know we grew up in similar eras. I don't know if you were like me out in the street playing baseball. I'm on a street that ended in a cul-de-sac, so we played baseball in the street all the time.
Right. No, we did play. There were times when we played baseball on the street. I mean, in school, that's what we would do. You know, during recess, we would also play baseball and stuff like that. Yeah, you know, I'd have friends come over and we'd play in our front yard, you know, baseball and stuff like that.
Right, and we use a
not 9 versus 9, but yeah.
No, absolutely no. We never had enough for a full thing, and you know, we use a tennis ball as opposed to a baseball because we were out there where if you hit the ball hard enough, you could most definitely hit a window or something like that. You know, so we were, you know, cutting back on any possibilities of a problem there. So we didn't use an actual baseball. We used the tennis ball. But
the tennis ball, you still can take out. Depends on how hard you hit it. We would actually always try and face away from the house. You know, that type of thing to lessen the possibility.
You still could. Depends on how hard you hit it. See, we see that because if we hit the away from the houses, on the other side of the cul-de-sac, the reason our street ended in a cul-de-sac was there was a parking lot on the other side for an apartment complex. And then just, you know, like 20 feet beyond that was one of the busier streets in our neighborhood. So if we hit the ball that direction, so we had to hit down the other way towards the houses. And, you know, we were not that powerful. So, you know, us getting the distance of the houses was generally, so it wasn't too much of a concern. But I mean, ultimately, what I'm getting at here is that the tennis ball, our de facto baseball, was a valuable thing. You didn't want to lose the ball because we only had one or two of them, you know, and if you lost the ball, it's just like in the Sandlot, you know, when we're hit over the fence and they're all bummed because, you know, they can't play anymore that day and they don't have any money to get another ball. That's legit, man. That happened to us. If you lost the ball, the day was ruined. Continue on until you could get, you know, scrounge up some money and get down to the drugstore or whatever and get a new ball. So I get why Steve McQueen doesn't want to lose his ball.
Yeah, especially since, as we mentioned earlier in this week, you know, he jumped out of his plane and the first thing he grabbed, you know, mitt. And the mitt.
The guy next to him grabbed the trombone, and the trombone doubled as the bat. They could use that. I mean, you know, but they're in a prison camp, so they make it work.
Very true. I always find it funny that if this ball was so important to him, why would he roll it? Obviously, he wants to escape also. But if he loses this ball, you know, what if it were to go through the wire? What if he rolled it and it went to the other end?
That's the thing.
He'd be like, oh, crap. How am I supposed to get it?
It's not like a solid fence. It's just like, you know, like chicken, isn't it? I mean, it's got holes in it. So if he rolled the ball and didn't roll it just right, it would have gone right through and it's on the other side. And then what's he going to do? Go, you know, climb all the way over the fence and be like, well, but my ball, I mean, come on, you got to let me get the ball.
I think it has a lot to do with, you know, he's able to just get the ball into the right place. You know, it reminds me of, you know, River Phoenix's line from Stand By Me.
That's right.
Because Chris Chamber never misses.
Yes.
Even when the ladies leave the toilet seat down. Yeah.
So Steve McQueen.
So Steve McQueen.
He has the coolness factor that just makes it so he can roll the ball just right. It's going to stop precisely right at the edge of the wall of the fence where he needs sense. That works. Right.
Of course. And then, so continuing with this silly argument, what wire? This wire, the warning wire. And he points to the German takes him seriously. He's like, what wire? He said, what do you mean, what wire? The wire over here. But again, this could also be a translation issue that the German didn't know enough, you know, doesn't really know enough English. Maybe he's saying to himself, did I say the wrong word?
That wire really is like a safety issue, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's this wire that's just, what, you know, a few inches off the ground. You know, I mean, what if you are just walking along, you're not paying attention, you know, you're tossing your ball up in the air, or, you know, you're just walking along, you know, daydreaming, whatever, you trip over that wire, you know, then, you know, you maybe twist your ankle, you maybe get shot outside of the wire. I mean, you know, that's a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Yeah, I hope to have enough insurance. And then he goes on to tell him that he has to add that it's forbidden to cross it. You should already know that. Okay, and what do you mean, how should he already know that? He just got to this camp. Did they give everyone a list of rules, or did they basically assume that from the previous camp you should know that?
I was going to say, he's been in other camps, so, you know, it's one of those rules that applies to all these.
But how does the guard know that?
They've got those yearbooks, remember?
That's true.
And under Steve McQueen's name, under his picture, it lists, you know, favorite hobbies, likes to cross the line of death, you know, so.
Exactly, the wire of death. So then he just, well, damn, my baseball rolled over there. And so the answer is a very simple one. So how am I going to get my baseball if it rolled over there? I got to, and then he goes, you have to first ask permission. Now, what does that mean? You're going to ask for permission?
there's a designated guard there that you go and you ask permission of, you know, if you need to go and go over the line, get the baseball, all that
right stuff. Now you would think that when you have, you know, when you're watching your young kids, right, so their ball rolls into the street, and then you say to them the same type of thing, that okay, and we'll get the ball, but you're not going to send the kid to go get it, you're going to go get it yourself. So
right.
It's very strange that they're going to actually let the prisoners go and pick up the ball himself. You know, the idea is, okay, tell me, my ball rolled over there. Okay, I'll go get it because I'm not going to get shot. But if you go get it, you're going to get shot.
So how much space is there between the line and the fence, do you figure?
I would say about 10 feet, maybe even a little more.
10 feet or so, you know, because it's a lot of dead space, you know. I mean, it's going unused there. I was going, you know, you've already got it roped off. You could, like, put it like a community garden in there, you know, something like that, you know, get the prisoners doing something a little bit more. They can grow some stuff, you know, it'd be fun for them.
Yeah, it's true. It is a space that could have been used more efficiently, especially since the guards don't even notice that someone stands in it. You have to wait until someone screamed at him.
Right.
You know, there's the blind spot that Hiltz finds is against the wire, but you have to get to that blind spot first. So the idea is that, okay, how come the guards didn't notice him in the first place?
Exactly.
That's the thing. Because he should ask permission, and then he lets him go. He just walks off on his own, and then, you know, Hiltz shows again his cool, you know, snapping his fingers at the guard and saying, I'm just getting my baseball. Don't shoot me. And the question is, can the guard really hear? Actually, when you look at the wire is pretty big. There's no reason why the ball wouldn't go through that.
I think it would, except for that McQueen coolness factor, like you said.
No question about that. So then the guard says, just stop it. Get over the wire. Go back immediately. And, you know, he takes his time. Okay. And now we have Strachwitz show up with his yearbook stuffed in his uniform. It's pretty funny. It's comical the way that this whole thing plays out. You have a commander coming in, and Strachwitz doesn't come by himself. He comes with, you know, four heavily armed guards with him.
Yeah. Well, each person has to come in and try and, you know,
justify,
assert their power and find out what's going on. And it's like, you know, you get the first guy that's in there asking, you know, why did you cross the wire, blah, blah, blah. And then you get the second guy come in, why did you cross the wire? And then the third guy comes in, why did you cross? It's like that scene in Airplane where the lady is freaking out and the kind of people, they go, calm down, stop.
Get a hold of yourself.
You know, and they start slapping her, and then someone says, yeah, get a hold of yourself. And then the next person comes in, no, let me handle this. What's going on, Zach? And then the next one, and they're all in the line. It's like they're all doing the same thing.
You guys with baseball bats.
Yeah.
I mean, Tom mentioned to me how much he loves the fact that you know, it's somewhat of a sting on McQueen, the fact that each time a ranking Nazi shows up, and they just annoy him more and more. because they keep asking the same questions, and he doesn't really have an answer to give them.
Yeah,
you know, so he just gives the same, and exactly, it's similar to the answer that Henley gave. Also, you know, when they asked him, when Werner asked him, what's he doing next to the truck? He says, "Oh, I'm stealing tools." You know. So then you have Shackwood come in and asking the same question,
the same answer until he suddenly doesn't, which is the best. I mean,
you can see that it's somewhat annoying to McQueen that he has to deal with it. And I love his nicknames for the various soldiers, you know, where he goes, where Shackles comes over, what are you doing here by the wire? He says, like I told Max, I was trying to get my baseball. Maybe in the 20 minutes that he's been in the camp, he's already able to know that his guard's name is Max.
So there's not really a Max.
Could be. Like I told Max, I was trying to get my baseball. He doesn't even let him finish.
They're on a first name. They're on a first name basis already. Yeah. Excellent. he could have carried that further, you know, been like, well, Max told me it was okay to come over here and get my baseball. He's like, who's Max? Well, you know, Max. Everybody knows Max. He's like, what? I don't know Max. Well, what? You don't know Max? You guys know Max? Oh, yeah, we know Max. You know, just keep it going like that. The whole rest of the movie, you've got these looking for Max, you know, and they keep it up. Oh, yeah, Max told us we could do this. Max told us we could plant a community garden beyond the wire of death. Yeah, Max said it was fine.
And then you hear, you know, the German, you know, attention to everybody. And then Von Luger shows up. Von Luger, once again, asks the same question. What are you doing here? Like I told Max here. Like I told this guy here.
but this is where, you know, McQueen turns it. And, you know, we get it was so great, just the timing of, you know, the way that things are broken down here as you're doing minute by minute. And this minute ends right as the stinger on this scene. You know, he gives that moment where he just says, ah, the heck with it. And says, yeah, I'm trying to break through your fence. And then it ended and it was like, oh, that's perfect.
Exactly. He's I was trying to cut through the wire.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. It's like, you know what? I'm just annoyed telling everybody the same thing. Like I told Max here, like I told this guy, you know what? I was just trying to escape.
Yeah. Max said it was fine to try and escape. I mean, come on.
What's very interesting is the original script is very different in this point.
Yeah. So are you saying McQueen improvised this moment here?
I don't know if he improvised it because the script adds a whole other aspect to why McQueen ends up going into the cooler at this point.
Okay.
Basically, you have the whole scene where he throws the baseball, and then nothing happens to him at that point. And then they show that the Queen actually hides under a truck. He climbs under a truck and hangs on. And Strachwitz notices this, and he gets really pissed. So what he does is he gets into the truck and starts driving it over tree stumps to try to bang him off.
It does anything to Steve McQueen. I mean, come on.
Exactly. I'll just quickly read it because it's pretty funny. It says, Jacques says that he's not going to take any action against anyone. This is the first day here, and there's been much stupidity and carelessness on both sides. And then it shows that during all of this, Hiltz has sneaked to a truck where he now hangs spread-eagled underneath by his hands and toes hooked into the lower. So then Strachwitz turns away from Ives and the others as they exit and goes grimly to the truck under which Hiltz is hanging. He orders the driver out with a gesture and takes his place at the wheel. The truck in reverse backs it into the camp, then slams it into gear and races into the tree trunk studded Appel area. The others watch in horror as Strachwitz drives the truck across the stumps. Hiltz flattens himself upward to his utmost as the stumps go by him by fractions of an inch, but he doesn't let go or cry out. Strach for a moment. Underneath the truck, Hiltz's face is grim, but he doesn't budge. Strachwitz's face flushes with anger and slams the truck into gear again. He takes off, this time violent truck over the highest stumps. Finally, he stops, beaten in his attempt to make Hiltz give in. He gets out and stands by the truck. And then it shows that then says a close up of Ives, who gives Strachwitz a lied derisive bird, which I'm not sure if they're referring there to his raspberry that he gives him, or if he actually is giving him the finger at this point. I don't know if in a movie in the 60s that's what they would. So then it says Strachwitz reacts to and notes Ives out of the corner of his eye, traits on the truck, and he goes, and then Strachwitz screams, "You may come out now, Hiltz." Hiltz emerges and faces Drakwitz, his eyes cold with hatred as Ferret emerge. Hiltz lifts up the tab of the collar of his shirt. Under it, as is often done by Americans in combat, is his insignia of rank. It's Captain Hiltz. So they sort of change things a little bit. I actually am curious to know whether this is something that, McQueen preferred. You know, that I'd rather, sass off in this way as opposed to, being dragged under a truck. It still says a lot. They break this up and they change things a little bit.
That's really interesting. There's two things that went through my mind as you're reading that. One is I thought this sounds like a really difficult scene to try and pull off. Especially given the time that this movie was made, it just would be difficult to shoot, difficult to edit. And I wondered if that might be part of why we didn't get that scene. The other thing that struck me as you were reading it, we were Tino earlier. I thought that reads like a very Tarantino type of scene.
Completely. No question about it. I mean, cause the script also has in a previous scene, the whole idea of Hilt still throwing his baseball. Because basically he's just told to stop this nonsense and get over the wire or you'll be killed instantly. Okay, and that's it. He doesn't have the whole back and forth. They truncated this the interactions between the two of them by doing it this way. But obviously, I think that the way they filmed it works better. Because as you said, it would add a Tarantino-esque look to the whole thing, which I don't know if that would work as well.
I definitely like the way it is in the film. I don't know that I would change it, but there's also a part of me that would really like to jump into the multiverse, that version play out as well.
Well, it's too bad that Tarantino didn't do that in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. All right, well, you have anything else to about this minute, Todd?
I don't want to risk, getting shot by the guards up in the tower, so, I think we're good.
No, is there anything else you want to say about the movie?
Well, I mean, it's a great movie. I mean, this was great to get to talk about this one small chunk of it in detail here. But, I mean, for folks that are listening to this podcast who, if you haven't seen the movie yet, I don't know why you're listening. You should watch the movie mostly. But, if you haven't seen The Great Escape, see The Great Escape. But it is a wonderful movie. Like I said on one of the previous installs, with my family recently, my two kids are both young adults, at this point. But all throughout their lives, there's been certain movies that I kind of had a mental list of that I was like, I want my kids to watch that movie with me someday. Things that were this were things like Planet of the Apes. And Godzilla and, I'm trying to think what else. All kinds of movies from the 80s, of course. But The Great Escape is one of the movies that was on that list. And I finally got to watch, within the last year and they really enjoyed it. It's a true classic. And,
did your wife enjoy it also?
Oh, yes. My wife has watched it many, many times. I think.
Oh, we should have gotten her on here also.
Oh, yeah. I think her history with it is that, I mean, obviously it's a movie that played on TV a lot during our childhoods. And I'm pretty sure that any time The Great Escape was on TV, her dad would watch it. And so she watched it many times when it was on broadcast TV with her folks. So,
yeah. All right. Great. So you want to once again tell everyone how they can get in contact with you?
Absolutely. Yeah. The blog Forgotten Films is at ForgottenFilmcast.com. The podcast is called The Forgotten Filmcast. You can find it everywhere you find podcasts. And then I'm on Twitter at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z.
All right. So while you're going to check out Todd's stuff, you rate, review, and subscribe to us. Give us good reviews if you like what you've been hearing. We've gone through 4 weeks of this, so we got another 30 weeks or so to go through. So, hang in there. This is going to be a fun ride. We're going to have a great time doing this. You can website thegreatescapeminute.com. You can send us an email at thegreatminute@gmail.com. You can write to us by Twitter, GreatEscapeMXM, or you can come and talk to us in our Facebook group, The Cooler. Hopefully, Tom will be out of incarceration next week, and we'll be able to join us again. He'll be back here hopefully on Monday. So until Monday, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.